This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org.
It's been a couple of weeks since the U.S. Supreme Court struck down race-conscious admissions practices at selective schools. So what's next? I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The U.S. Supreme Court has overturned affirmative action, meaning race-conscious admissions programs at selective schools across the country will need to rethink how they operate. So what's next for the future of promoting diversity in higher education? Here to discuss is Oyun Poon, an associate professor of higher ed leadership at Colorado State University and co-author of Rethinking College Admissions, and Anthony Chen, associate professor of sociology at Northwestern. So, Professor Poon, how did we get here?
Oh, gosh. So I think it's really important to remember that the person who founded an organization called Students for Fair Admissions, SFFA, his name is Ed Bloom, and he's a white conservative anti-civil rights activist. And so for decades, his whole career, he's been trying to roll back civil rights laws, voting rights. The Voting Rights Act he was able to gut. And then he tried to end affirmative action in college admissions in 2016 with Fisher versus University of Texas at Austin. And he realized, and he says this very publicly, that he racially miscast Abigail Fisher, a white woman who didn't get into UT Austin. And he went around the country asking for Asian people to come forward. But the thing is, no Asian person came forward to testify that they were harmed by race-conscious admissions. And in fact, the majority of Asian Americans support affirmative action.
Mm. Are you surprised, Anthony, that the Supreme Court decided the way that they did?
Well, I guess a little part of me was surprised because 2 weeks before the UNC and Harvard cases came down, the Supreme Court saved Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And in that decision, Chief Justice Roberts, writing for the majority, said, essentially, I don't like Section 2 that much, but the facts of this case and the way it was decided in the trial record doesn't support remaking our jurisprudence anew. And so I thought to myself, I read the Burroughs decision for the Harvard's case, which is a trial court case out of Massachusetts. I read the Biggs decision out of UNC. And I looked over the appeals court decision as well, and I thought, well, you know, the trial record also doesn't seem to support remaking our jurisprudence anew in the affirmative action cases. So maybe they will take a narrow approach to limiting affirmative action rather than the more sweeping approach that they did take. So a little part of me was surprised.
In a majority opinion by Chief Justice John Roberts, he said, quote, the systems in place, quote, lack sufficiently focused and measurable objectives warranting the use of race, unavoidably employ race in a negative manner, involve racial stereotyping, and lack meaningful endpoints. Those admissions programs cannot be reconciled with the guarantees of the Equal Protection Clause.
That's right. Even though Chief Justice Roberts is the one penning the opinion, there's a bit of legal ventriloquism going on here because a lot of the points he makes are points that Alito and Thomas made in either concurrences or dissents in prior affirmative action cases that came before the court. And so even though his name is on it, even though he tries to write it with his typical stylistic flourishes, a lot of what he says are points that were made in the past by the two other justices.
Professor Poon, can you tell us more about the role that Asian Americans played in this fight?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Ed Blum really used Asian Americans as a racial imagery and stereotypes of high achievement among Asian Americans to push forward this idea that race-conscious admissions harmed Asian Americans, when in fact it did not. There is no empirical evidence to suggest that. But at the same time, there were small segments, a minority of Asian Americans, predominantly Chinese American, wealthier middle-class immigrant Chinese Americans, who were making a very loud stink over these policies, but they don't represent the majority of Asian Americans. And unfortunately, then Ed Blum was able to use that image to promote this idea that affirmative action was actually racist when it is not. It is actually a policy that promotes diversity and equity and values and affirms the diversity of our identities, our experiences, and pushes forward opportunity for everyone.
So, Professor Chen, when we say race can't be considered during the admissions process, what does that actually look like?
Well, the ruling is, a bit complicated in terms of how it tries to create like a bit of a loophole for the consideration of race. The way that universities have been considering a race up until this point, which is through a holistic, individualized review where race is one of many factors and can act as a plus on the an admissions decision, that can't be done anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But towards the very end of the Chief Justice's majority opinion, it does seem like it's okay for applicants to talk about their race in their application essays and talk about how it's affected their lives, how they might have overcome some barriers as a result of their race. And so the Supreme Court says it's okay for universities to consider this information as long as it's considered as a way of making an assessment of the applicant's character or their abilities that might contribute something to the incoming class. So race can be considered in that way, but in other ways, the ways that it had been used up until 2 weeks ago, it can no longer be used that way. So,
having diverse communities in selective schools, I mean, that's what we know affirmative action was aiming to create. What's your sense of how successful it was in doing so, Professor Poon?
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely necessary. It was very successful.
I'm hearing so many people tell their stories.
Right. I mean,
this is how I got into Harvard.
This is how I got into college and graduate school, too. It played a role. It played an important role in who I am today. It's absolutely, you could even argue that the women and the people of color on the Supreme Court itself came about, that composition came about due to affirmative action in considering, right, the diversity of the court, recognizing that our country is a diverse place in society and democracy. And if we want to have a multiracial democracy that acknowledges that diversity, we need to consider these issues. So I think that there are still things that colleges can do. I hope that colleges and universities will not cower away from things that they can do.
Let's talk about that. And I do want to hear from both of you. With affirmative action gone, how can universities continue to promote diversity in their institutions? That's the big question.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so you can look at California as an example, right? California passed an affirmative action ban in 1996 that went into effect in 98. I was actually a college administrator in the early 2000s in the University of California system, and I was an admissions reader as well. And so to Tony's point about this, the Supreme Court ruling saying students can still write about who they are, and they should continue to write about who they are and their whole stories. What I, as an admissions reader, was allowed to do was to then think about students' stories, their individual stories, to say, does this represent a story of leadership? Does it represent a story of persistence? What never felt satisfactory to me as an admissions reader, though, was that notions of persistence, say a student who was, you know, talks about a story about going through a discriminatory experience and how that has inspired them to, you know, lead in different ways. Sure, I could call that a persistence and leadership story, but it never felt fully satisfactory to capture the wholeness of the humanity of that story. At the same time, universities and California, what we did was aggressive recruitment, right? And so California has, you know, they saw an immediate dip, particularly in Indigenous, Black, and Latinx student admission rates. However, they've been able to get really aggressive and think about new ways and creative ways to do it. So nothing in the Supreme Court ruling says that you can't aggressively recruit.
So you think that that will continue then?
That has to. I hope so. But I am seeing signs of universities backing off of it, right? So, for example, Western Illinois just took off their diversity, equity, and inclusion scholarship.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know,
it just magically disappeared.
It just disappeared. But their legacy scholarship continues, and legacies are children of alumni, and those populations continue to remain extremely white, predominantly white. So that's not something that they needed to do.
Hmm. Professor Chen, weigh in here. What else can universities continue to do here? How are they going to promote diversity?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, recruitment is probably the way that it'll go forward. But it's sort of difficult to forecast what's really going to happen in the medium term here. But we do have the historical experience of California, which played out exactly as Professor Poon said. We also have the experience of the University of Michigan. But now we have a nationwide ban on affirmative action. And part of what's going to happen is that schools, you know, the application sending behavior of students of different racial backgrounds is going to change. So Asian Americans are pretty aggressive about sending their applications all over the place. They may get even more aggressive. So it may be the case that the rejection rates are higher at extremely selective schools because suddenly a lot of Asian American applicants think, finally, I'm going to get a fair shake. On the other hand, it may be the case that applications from Black and Latinx students and Indigenous may fall, and they may fall exactly at the schools that, you know, can stand to lose them the least. And so, you know, so there could be, you know, a lot of drastic changes. On the other hand, schools that are able to spend the money that they need to on these recruiting programs, which are not cheap, may be able to stave off a total breakdown of their diversity, whereas schools that don't have that much money, who don't have the resources to devote to recruitment, are going to suffer the worst effects. And so, and that's going to map onto the status hierarchy of higher education in fairly, you know, expected ways. Schools with larger endowments that are more highly selective, that get a lot of applications no matter what, may be able to do better than schools that are lower on down on the status hierarchy with fewer resources, smaller endowments, and less interest on the part of all students.
So as a professor now, your former life working in admissions, what kind of recruitment do you think works? And what resources are needed to make sure that it works?
Right. So we know from research that a lot of colleges and universities, unfortunately, they recruit at whiter high schools and wealthier high schools because over the last several decades, there's been a public divestment from higher education, so they need to find revenue elsewhere. So the tuition dollars matter to keeping the lights on and paying our salaries as faculty. And so, unfortunately, they're recruiting mostly at whiter and wealthier high schools. They can diversify that. Policymakers need to think about funding higher education at better rates and solving this affordability crisis that we have right now in higher education as well. So I think that there's a lot of things that can be done, and they just universities should not be cowering right now. They should be thinking, learning lessons from Michigan, from California, and getting aggressive with recruitment, but also thinking in new ways, right, about how admissions is done. I think I was telling Professor Chen earlier that we often assume that college admissions and college going has to be the way it's always been done. And that's not true. We can think creatively. There's direct admissions in Idaho. Other states have different creative ways of thinking about bringing in students from across the state.
So do you think it's possible there could be a trickle-down effect from schools to the workplace?
Yes, unfortunately. I mean, even just thinking about if higher education is about knowledge production, sciences, technology, engineering, that those are all sectors that are going to suffer. Ironically, of course, the Supreme Court ruling said, oh, the ban on affirmative action doesn't affect the military academies. So they accepted that, right? So it's interesting or disturbing or both to think about.
They were exempted.
They were exempted, right? So if we know that the military sector and our national security benefits from a diverse workforce, military ranks and leadership, we can benefit as a country across sectors with a diverse workforce and leadership.
Yeah.
We're going to suffer as a country, unfortunately, I think, in losing out on the wisdom that comes and perspectives and creativity and talent. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's next, Professor Chen? What are you going to be watching out for as we wrap here?
Well, in the very short term, I'm going to be very interested in taking a look at the guidance that the Biden administration is going to issue through the Department of Justice and the Department of Education. They have civil rights units, and they typically collaborate on memoranda after a decision like this to let schools know exactly what they can do or try to do that would be within the law.
Yeah.
I was just speaking with Professor Poon earlier, and she's going to be part of that meeting, which is wonderful.
Great.
So in the very short term, look out for some news articles about what the Biden administration is specifically guiding. That will tell us, I think, a lot about what we should expect to see in the medium term.
Anthony Chen is Associate Professor of Sociology at Northwestern University, and Oyen Poon is an Associate Professor of Higher Education Leadership at Colorado State University and co-author of Rethinking College Admissions. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of Reset was produced by Micah Yasin, and it was edited by Daniel Tucker and Ethan Schwab. Keep up with this story and more by making sure that you're subscribed to our podcast. We share episodes every morning and afternoon, Monday through Friday, with a bonus episode on Saturdays. That'll do it for this morning. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. I'll talk to you again this afternoon.